This is a production from the Yak Podcasting Network. The home for your growing sonic map of local voices united in their commitment to the best in podcasting.
And now, a yak.
Yak!
All right, you are listening to episode number 4 of the Until the Whistle podcast. I'm your host, Marcus Myers, and we're back. We're back, and the Longhorns picked up another win, so people in Austin should be a little happier these days. We're looking like we may have some things cooking there, so definitely going to talk a little bit about the big win against TCU and what they have to look forward to from here on out. But this episode is going to be a little bit of different, probably a little bit of a freestyle episode. I'm just getting in from a pretty long day. Spent the last few days in New York. And so talk a little bit about my time there, as well as a couple other things. But yeah, I'm just getting back in, man. I had a pretty eventful last few days. I flew up to New York Tuesday morning because my best friend is Natasha Hastings. She is a 2-time Olympic gold medalist. She went to South Carolina, didn't go to UT, but she runs track and field professionally. She runs the 400 meters and has a foundation that she started this year. It's called the Natasha Hastings Foundation. And I am one of her board members. So I am fortunate enough to help serve beside her and kind of do some of the things that, you know, we've set out to do through her foundation. Our mission is to be a starting block for young girls to become women of confidence in sport and life. And it's really inspired by kind of Natasha's upbringing. Came from a single parent home. And so, you know, it costs quite a bit for her to be able to participate in track and field, to attend nationals, you know, fly around the country for meets, that kind of thing. And so what we're looking to do with our foundation is to not only help provide for some of that financial burden for some young ladies to be able to, you know, have some of that experience, but then also to provide them a platform that Natasha can kind of impart, you know, years of her wisdom into these young ladies as they're growing up, you know, with them being the future of tomorrow. So, excuse me, really great cause. It's really something that, you know, we just are looking to expand upon and do more and more. And the reason we were in New York is she's from New York. And so she wanted to do what we call a tea time gala. And it was a fundraising event that we had Wednesday night. So I'm recording this late Thursday night. You'll probably hear it Friday morning, most likely. And I'm just getting back in. But the event was a huge success. New York is always crazy. It's the city that never sleeps. And so it was even crazier this time because the UN General Assembly was there. And so we were staying at the Time Hotel. And man, there was like traffic everywhere. I got in, my flight left Tuesday morning, and I got in, I guess, Tuesday afternoon, maybe around 2:00. And it took me an hour and a half to get from JFK to the hotel, which to me was just insane. But I mean, I know traffic is crazy. I've been in New York before. And so it was just a wild deal. But we had a really good turnout at the event, raised probably close to $10,000 that night for some young ladies to be able to, you know, go to nationals without having to worry about some of that financial burden. We're looking, still getting some more donations coming in. So we're not sure what our final tally is just yet, but we're still working towards it. And, you know, anytime I go to New York, I always get inspired to just kind of like get my hustle on, you know, like anytime I come back from there, I feel like I'm kind of reenergized, whatever the right phrase is. You know, I feel like there's something about that city that really makes you want to kind of just get on your grind. And so that was a really good time. I got a chance to meet a lot of really cool people. I got to meet the USATF, so the USA Track and Field CEO, Max Siegel, some of Natasha's fellow athletes were there. She's she represents Under Armour or sponsored by Under Armour. So some of them were there as well. And so it was just a really good time. And we're looking to actually hopefully get her to have her own podcast coming up here on the Yak. So, you know, be on the lookout for that. We're just trying to provide some different opportunities for people to reach out to some different audiences. So I'll probably have her on my show one of these days just to have some switch up of conversation. Maybe some of you guys, if your wives are always on you about, you know, listening to football podcasts, that it'll be something they can listen into. So but it was a good time in New York. Funny enough, I was standing outside of my hotel about 10:30 on Tuesday night, and out of the car, out of a taxi, steps Brian Jones. For those of you, you know who Brian Jones is, he played a year with UCLA and then transferred to UT in 1988. He played with Texas for a couple of years, was an all SWC selection, and then went on to the NFL, played for about 6 years there. And then he even hosted a radio show here in Austin for a little while on 1300 The Zone. He did, you know, some sideline reporting for UT, and there's, you know, some pretty funny stories around about some of his time here, but he's a good family friend of mine, and he lives in West Palm Beach now and has a, is on the College Football Today CBS Sports show. And so what they do is, I guess they record their shows on Tuesday nights. So he flies up, does his show, and then flies back. So, you know, like I said, small world, just so happened to be staying at the same hotel as I was. And so he and I were standing around and we got to talk a little bit. So it was good catching up with him. May even try and get him on the show one of these days. And I think that would be pretty interesting to get some of his thoughts. But he almost used the dreaded, you know, we're back term with me when I was talking to him about the game. Both of us were really impressed by, you know, how the guys showed up against TCU. And so I guess we can dive right into that. You know, the atmosphere, once again, I mean, I can't harp on enough how well Chris Del Conte has really nailed the atmosphere around game day. It was another day where, you know, it was supposed to rain, and so people were kind of wary. And I think coming off of the USC game, you know, I certainly didn't expect the crowd to be that large. And so there weren't as many students there this week, but the students still turned out. There was still something of a home field advantage. And I don't think that's something that, you know, I've really experienced a whole lot of, even in my time playing when we were really, really good. You know, I think there was a handful of times. I know the Oklahoma State game comes to mind, but, you know, it's not often that you can say that UT's had a true home field advantage, and Chris Del Conte's really helped us build that. So I think it's something that, you know, they can continue to build upon, especially putting, you know, a product out on the field that is currently out there. And so, you know, I think it'll be really something that they can continue to build upon. And, you know, just I couldn't describe it enough. I mean, if you haven't been to a game yet, the experience is completely different than it has been. So please get out there, give it a shot. But yeah, I mean, 31-16, right? So, you know, here you are the past two games. You have wins of 37-14 and 31-16. So the defense has given up 30 points in the last two games, whereas in the very first game, they gave up 34. So, you know, huge turnaround, big, big win. You know, everybody knows we talked about it last week, the streak of, you know, how long it had been since we had beat TCU. And so they were kind of like the, you know, that bully on the block. And we kind of took it to them. So I was really proud of how the team stepped up, thought that they really showed themselves really, really well. You know, when you kind of look at how some of the box score stuff broke down, you know, we didn't have the prettiest of stats per se, but I think the best stats where it counted, we you know, had more first downs than them. Didn't really rush it that well. So we ran the ball 45 times for 112 yards. So it's only 2.5 average per carry. But Sam was, you know, efficient on offense. He was 22 for 32, 255 yards in the air, 2 touchdowns, and most importantly, no TDs. And, you know, again, you look at the defense, they held that offense. It was really explosive offense, put up 400 or 500 yards on Ohio State the week before and held them to 372. So, you know, keeping an explosive offense like that in a position where you're creating all the turnovers that you did, the punter, you know, we talked about him being a freshman and really needing to step up. He, you know, averaged almost 40 yards a punt this game, only had to punt it 5 times and you know, caused 2 fair catches. So, you know, kept the ball away from one of their key return men was a really important thing. And I think, you know, again, sometimes those things go overlooked in games, but you look at it, you won the time of possession, won the turnover battle, and even overcame a couple of missed field goals. So, you know, it was kind of one of those things where you're thinking that the game was going pretty well. TCU, you know, jumped out to an early lead, but then we were able to respond. And, you know, quite honestly, from that, you know, I would say second, third quarter on, it kind of just felt like the game was going to go our way. There's always room for improvement, but Colin Johnson had a huge game. Little Jordan Humphrey had a great game. Really, you know, acquitted themselves well on offense. And I think, you know, they should be commended for that. And then defensively, you know, just led by the stud of a freshman in Caden Stearns. I mean, he had 2 huge interceptions. The one on the fake pass, it reminded me of Michael Griffin again, you know, kind of swooping in, picking it off and tapping his toe before he went out of bounds to make sure that he was able to secure that interception. So he finished the game, you know, finished the game with a pretty good stat line there. Even was named the Thorpe Award Player of the Week. So, I mean, you got a true freshman, you know, putting up stats like that. I mean, that's it's really, really impressive. He is doing some things out there that he was expected to do, but maybe not expected to do as quickly. And, it, you know, because of it, this UT team that we're, you know, getting to watch now is on a 3-game winning streak. And that's, it's been, I don't know how long until, since they can say that. So, you know, the game was a really important game. excuse me. I don't know what's going on. This flight of mine, it got me all congested or something. So I'm sorry. I'm having to make all this noise in the mic, you guys, but that game was a big one. It was a real big game for TCU. We came out of it relatively unscathed. We did have coming out, I guess, late Thursday that BJ Foster won't be available for the Kansas State game, and that'll be pretty big. I have to pay attention, closer attention, or I bet Alex has this on his deep dig if I go and listen or read up on it. But I have to pay attention to who they use instead of BJ Foster. I know there was a thought that Demarion Overshown would possibly be in that role in that lightning package where you have an extra DB on the field. And I've always, you know, felt since he's hit campus that BJ Foster was definitely well served for that role, but not having him on the road going to K-State will be an adjustment. So we'll, you know, have to rely on the depth. And fortunately, there is a lot of good players at the DB spots. So I think they'll have a good amount of people to rely on there with him being out. And then Keontae Ingram, he's staying a little nicked up. You know, I think he came back against TCU, but then had a hip pointer or something like that during the game. And so he's, you know, been able to play and should make his return to the field against K-State. And, you know, it's funny. K-State's always been like that thorn in our side. You know, they always play us really, really tough. In fact, I don't think we've won at Kansas State since my true freshman year, which would have been 2002. So if you think about that, that's 16 years ago. Yeah, 16 years ago since they last won. And the funniest part about it is, you know, that game was even a handful. At the time, we were the number 8 team in the country and Kansas State was number 17. And Dusty Mangum hit a field goal late in the game. I want to say it was like a minute and a half left or something. And then Kansas State still had a chance to come back and tie it up with 7 seconds to go. And Marcus Tubbs, who was playing defensive tackle, came in and blocked the field goal in order for us to be able to win that game. So Kansas State just always has scrappy players. You know, I can think back to when Darren Sproles was terrorizing us, even Jordy Nelson. My God, he used to just make us look silly out there. And then Terrence Newman was there. I remember they used to do the Terrence Newman chant, and he would be back there returning punts. So, you know, they've had some good talent come through there, you know, in my day. And then, you know, obviously they've continued to have success since then. So it'll be a really good test for this Texas team to go on the road. I don't think this Kansas State team is near as good as, you know, some of the other teams that we've faced in the past. But I think, you know, it still will take a lot for this team to be able to go on the road in the Big 12, keep their focus, and, you know, perform at a high level. And I think that's what I'll be looking for. I think that's what all Longhorns fans are looking for, is just for us to be able to continue to take that next step forward. You get some of that national chatter back about us. You know, we cracked back into the polls. I think in one of the polls we're number 18, and the other one we're 22. Quite honestly, I wish we weren't, but you know, that's just me. I prefer this team to really have to earn it, kind of keep a chip on their shoulder. I don't want them, you know, reading the press clippings or whatever you have it. So I'm sure that, you know, Coach Herman and his guys are leaning into you know, keeping that mentality up. But it looks like we're starting to develop somewhat of an identity, or you're starting to at least see some signs of what they're trying to do. And I think Sam is learning that if he gets the ball in his playmakers' hands and gets it to them early, that, you know, good things happen. I mean, we have two of probably arguably the best receivers in the conference, definitely mismatched size-wise. And, you know, I think it really helps to get Colin going early and then coming back to him often. And then that really can help set the tone for the offense. I'll have to watch the offensive line more closely because I'm still trying to figure out what it is about us not getting as much movement up front to be able to run the ball more effectively. But, you know, then again, it was against TCU and they have a really good defense. They always have a solid scheme. You know, and I imagine their game plan going into it was to, in a lot of ways, shut down the run and make Sam beat you. So, and even when you go back and look at it, you know, I had said last week that against USC, I think Sam rushed the ball 17 times. And I, you know, personally would like to see that number a little bit lower. And, you know, that, I guess, request was granted because, he only rushed it 11 times or something like that this week. So, you know, I think it was really, really, what's the right word I'm looking for? I think it was a sign in the right direction. Let's say it like that. A sign that he's moving in the right direction, that he has, some wit about him. You know, his head is on his shoulder squarely, and, you know, just got to hope that he continues to make that next leap. But looks like, you know, the guys are starting to get into the swing of things. They're really kind of developing an identity, and this should be one of the more manageable Kansas State teams that, you know, they'll have to face. And, you know, you never want to overlook your opponent, but I mean, this very well could be a 4-1 ranked Texas football team going into the Cotton Bowl for Texas OU next weekend. So, I mean, Kansas State game is a huge game just because it's another conference game. It's another opportunity to go out there, exert some dominance. Would be nice to keep them under 20 again. And I think they can do that, which would make it, you know, their third straight game in a row doing that if they're able to. And I think that would do a lot for their confidence heading into the Texas-Oklahoma game. And, you know, you don't want to get too far ahead of yourself, but OU was in a dogfight against Army. And it's hilarious that, you know, people are talking about all the ways that they had to try to watch the game because it was on pay-per-view. I didn't even know pay-per-view still existed when it came to college football, but apparently it does. And that game was on there, and they were in a true dogfight. I mean, Army took them to overtime and rolled up a bunch of yards. Now, of course, they have like an offense that isn't necessarily as conventional or your typical college, you know, spread them out type offense. I mean, they run the ball a ton. And so that would be an area that you would hope we could take advantage of on the ground. And we've had some success in the past few years rushing the ball against OU. And it just lets me know that this Big 12 is kind of wide open. I spent a lot of time watching the Texas Tech-Oklahoma State game. And, you know, that game is going to be tough. And more than likely, I bet you it's a night game at Tech. Somehow we always have to, or not always, but a good amount of time, we end up having to play them in the evenings. And if they keep on performing at the clip that they're at, you know, I was thinking that the stretch that was going to be toughest this year was going to be the SC, TCU, Kansas State, OU stretch. But it's quite possible that, you know, this kind of gamut that we're going to run into of the, what is it, OU, Baylor, Okie State, West Virginia, Texas Tech is even tougher. And Iowa State, I mean, Iowa State's going to come to town in November, the week before Thanksgiving. And they're not an easy out these days. So really, when you look at the schedule and the way it's unfolding and just how this Big 12 race is playing itself out, you got to get this Kansas State win under your belt, because these, you know, I would say Baylor should be a game that we should win. But then, you know, everything else, it could really go either way. But I think the positive is we have just as much a chance, if not better than before, to win a lot of games. I would have predicted this team probably as an 8-4 squad, and I'm probably still sitting at that in my mind. But if they get on a roll, I mean, you just never know. Sometimes it just takes a team getting hot, and, you know, they're still young enough in some respects where, you know, they don't really know any better. So it's good to see some of the younger guys taking after, you know, what some of the older guys are preaching. You hear guys about, you know, talking about their 24-hour rule. So everybody seems to kind of be bought into that and blocking in, you know, some of the outside noise and just focusing on the team and what they have in hand. So I think that's a really good, you know, sound message that they're all holding together. And, you know, who knows how far it'll take them. But I certainly would love to be able to go to a bowl game, you know, somewhere that's not in Texas, and enjoy, you know, the team continuing to build. I don't think this is our year. I don't think this is the year we win the Big 12, but it's kind of wide open right now. So, I mean, why not us, right? But if I still had to put my money on it, you know, I still think we might slip up a game somewhere where we shouldn't. And then, you know, you still got to contend with, you know, the rest of the talent that is in the Big 12. I've heard Ketch talk about this a few times, but, you know, we haven't really played or had to come across any good quarterback play to this point. And so the guys that, you know, are coming up in the schedule are certainly going to be better than some of the ones we've already faced. And that'll be interesting to see in Sam's growth, how he does facing off against guys that are technically a little bit better than him, or at least by the numbers, they've shown themselves to be better than him to this point in the season. So the defense, you know, I think the defense is there and ready. You know, they're being led. Gary Johnson is really playing at a high level, had 11 tackles this past game. So is Brandon Jones. So hopefully you just continue to see those guys stay healthy and getting out there and continuing to fight. Chris Boyd, you know, he battled all game with Jalen Reagor, and even times where he would get out of position, he still, you know, was able to make up for it and make big plays when necessary. And I think that's a sign of a good cornerback when, you know, you do get beat, you're able to shake it off, come back and make a big play. So I think this team is headed in the right direction. And man, it's so much better around Austin when they're winning. And so that's something to feel good about, something everybody can feel good about. You can kind of poke your chest out a little bit and hopefully be able to do the same one more time this week after they play Kansas State. So, you know, we'll be looking towards that game. And yeah, I mean, that'll be it. I guess I'll take things in a little bit different direction now on the podcast. And it's still UT related, but, you know, I'll probably go off on a slight tangent here. On Tuesday morning, we lost Julius Whittier, which was the first African-American to letter in football for the University of Texas. And, you know, myself being African-American, it's really, you know, that's a loss that I felt a little bit more than I thought I would. The man certainly lived a great life, and I had an opportunity to meet him once before. But, you know, he's a San Antonio native, and I'm reading some of this, you know, straight off of the UT press release that they put out, and was a 1969 Highland High School graduate. And then, you know, was the first black athlete to letter in football, and then among the first, you know, black athletes to receive a scholarship when he came to UT in 1969. He played for the 1970 and 1971 national championship teams and ultimately lettered for 3 years. But, you know, I wanted to take out, I guess, a little bit of time just to talk about kind of that impact on me, because, you know, like I said, I didn't have a close relationship with him at all. I met him once or twice in passing, heard him speak at an event once, but I guess I never fully took into appreciation, you know, what it was that he did in a time that, you know, he was a minority on campus. He was truly, truly a minority on campus, right? I mean, one of very few doing what he was doing, and in that time. And so, you know, for him to be the first, I think it really paved the way for someone like myself to be able to come after him. And I don't think sometimes we take enough time to reflect on what that would have been like. I mean, I get nervous sometimes I get nervous doing this podcast, right? I get nervous if I got to speak in front of large groups. Now, imagine being the only black player on a football team. Like, I don't even really know where to go, how I could kind of wrap my mind around that. But one of the greatest things about football is you meet people from all these different walks of life. And I think that was one of the things that I took away most from my time at UT, was that I encountered people from all across the country, all across the state, that if it were not for football, there's a strong chance I would have never talked to them. Right. I mean, let's just be honest about it. Not because I only talk to black people, but, you know, most of my closest friends are black. I don't think that's, you know, anything out of the norm. You tend to gravitate to who you come up around, who you spend the most time around. And a lot of times people that look like you, you know, people that know your experience, people know what it is like to be you, if you will. And there's just some things about, you know, what that experience is like that is hard to describe. So I can only imagine having to not have anyone in your locker room to turn to. And from all accounts, from what he described, or I guess I should say that differently, have anyone to turn to that looks like you, right? Have anyone to turn to that kind of knows what your experience is, knows what it feels like to walk in your shoes, knows what it feels like to be looked at or stared at or thought less than of just because of the color of your skin. But from all accounts, from everything that he explained, his teammates never made him feel that way. Now, whether they actually felt some kind of way about him being there or not, he made it pretty clear in the times that I've heard him speak and what I've read about him, that they took pretty good care of him, that they treated him, you know, just like one of the guys. And he just really focused hard on being the best that he could be. And so I certainly think that's a testament to his teammates and, you know, their character at the time. But, you know, I just think that he did a really awesome thing by taking that leap of faith, being the first one to go through that process. And it made it so much easier for the rest of us. I mean, one of the I talk about Casey a lot because he's just such a character. But, you know, chances are if Casey and I weren't playing football and at UT at the same time, our paths probably would have never crossed. I would have never heard some of the crazy, you know, stuff that came out of his mouth. I would have never learned some of the things I learned from him. And so, you know, that's just one of the great things about sport is it brings people together from all walks of life, and you get to expose them to your world and they get to expose you to theirs. Another one of my good friends is Jeremy Warner, and I was able to meet him through sport. And so it kind of goes back to, I guess, kind of the thought I was talking about with Natasha's vision for the foundation is just sports being this stepping stone for you to do greater things in life. I mean, hell, if it wasn't for sport, I would have never met, you know, if it wasn't for me playing football at UT, you know, being pretty decent in high school, I would have never met Jeff Ketchum. I would have never come across this particular opportunity for a podcast. So it's really cool, you know, to think about all the things that sports can impart on you. My work ethic, my drive, my ability to multitask, my my ability, I guess, just to kind of schedule, because the way our, you know, for people that aren't aware, the way our schedule would work is in college, all of our classes had to be done before 1 p.m. So, you know, you would have some people, you know, your regular college students that could, you know, take afternoon classes, that kind of thing. Well, we didn't have that luxury because we had practice in the afternoon. We had meetings. We had to get weights in. And so all of our classes had to be done by one. And then, you know, you would go to practice or I guess once classes were done, we would typically work out, lift weights before we went to meetings, and then from meetings out to practice, after practice, grab something from the dining hall, after the dining hall, study hall, you know, homework, whatever other stuff college kids are doing. So a lot of that was video games for us. And then you sleep and you wake up early the next morning and do it again. So, you know, just I guess when I think back on my time at UT, I'm really appreciative of all the opportunities and doors that my time there opened for me, all the connections that I was able to make, all the great people whose paths I got to cross, great leaders that I got to hear from. Coach Brown was always good about bringing in people, you know, whether it was in business or in sport, that were successful and letting us hear from them, letting us hear from their experiences. And it's funny that, you know, some of the stuff that we used to hear at the time, I'm like, gosh, come on, like another meeting. Why do we have to hear this? But as I got older, I started realizing more and more of those things really did stick with me. And I have a much greater appreciation for them. So there's a lot of intrinsic value that comes with participating in sports. And it really just changed my life. And I can't be more grateful for the opportunities that have come my way just for that. So I don't know. I just kind of a bit ranty there, but I did want to take some time to remember Julius Whittier and, you know, just to, you know, say thank you. I mean, I know he can't hear me. I know his family members probably aren't listening or anything like that, but I certainly am appreciative of what he did for UT football and what, you know, the groundwork that he laid. And excuse me, he's, you know, another person that's in the Longhorn Hall of Honor. And, you know, it's just someone that I think was instrumental in changing the course of the history for UT football. So that's pretty much going to be it. It's a pretty short show this week. I don't have any more in me. I'm worn out. And so I'm probably going to head to bed here in a few, but didn't have a whiskey of choice that I ended up sipping on tonight. Although I do have a really good one that I got from Ireland. I went to the Jameson Distillery in, I want to say it's Middleton, Ireland, but don't get me lying. It's near Cork, not too far outside of Cork, Ireland. I was there for work at the end of last year and had a chance to go to the distillery, and I bought back a Jameson Crescent, as well as a couple bottles of what they call Method and Madness. And both of those offerings are only available in Europe. And so I wanted to, you know, make sure I brought back some stuff that I couldn't get in the States. So I brought some for my best friend, Jonathan. Again, plugging shamelessly the For the Culture Brewing Company, Brewing Club that's becoming a company, and their stuff. So again, check them out, For the Culture. But brought him back a bottle, brought my brother back some, brought one of my other friends back some, so that we could all have some stuff. So if I were to have been drinking anything tonight, it probably would have been some of the Jameson Crescent. Real smooth finish, not too, you know, not too heavy or anything like that, but just a good smooth sipping whiskey. So that's going to be my time for the Until the Whistle podcast. Again, thanks to the folks at the Yak for giving me this platform. Thank you guys for, you know, continuing to listen. Hope that you enjoyed this episode, and I will catch you the next time the whistle blows.